for Wednesday, August 25th. It's the early word from the WNYC newsroom. Hello, I'm Lance Lucky, in for Isaac Davey Aronson, with a look at this morning's top news stories, the day ahead, and reporting highlights from the WNYC news team. Coming up, Arun Venugopal talks with Anna Kaja, the Pakistani-American creator of Shahid, The Dream and Death of Benazir Bhutto. And Elsa Chang attends the latest terror-related trial in New York. We'll start with the morning's top headlines just ahead.
The Early Word is a production of WNYC Radio. You can support this podcast by making a donation at WNYC.org, where you can also get the latest updates on this morning's headlines on the news page.
The Justice Department will appeal a federal court ruling that would keep federal money out of 22 projects involving embryonic stem cell research. The ruling does not affect projects for which money has already been given, but it could mean millions already spent will be wasted. Long Island commuters will have to grin and bear the delays for several more days, according to LIRR officials. Crews are working around the clock to repair the damage done by a fire at a key switching station built in the 1920s. But as Matthew Sherman explains, if a scheduled upgrade had already happened, the recovery from the current mess would have been quicker.
The Long Island Railroad uses an 80-year-old mechanical system to route trains near Jamaica, Queens. Until now, it's worked well. Two engineers manually push levers laid out in a large board in front of them, sending air through pneumatic tubes that trigger track switches. This fall, a $50 million project will replace that table with microprocessors. Spokesman Mike Charles says going high-tech wouldn't necessarily have prevented Monday's incident. The fire apparently started in relatively new cables, leading up to the board, not the board itself. But the fire might have been easier to recover from if the LIRR only needed to repair wires and computers instead of dozens of levers. Charles says the railroad isn't ready to install the computers yet and will wait until October. For WNYC, I'm Matthew Sherman.
New York State education officials say they'll use the new $700 million Race to the Top grant on specific education reforms that can get results. As WNYC's Beth Fertig explains, they're also spending a big chunk of money on a database for tracking student achievement.
This database would allow teachers to track the progress of students from kindergarten all the way to college. This way, they and the principals could look for kids who may be falling through the cracks and also figure out which teachers are most effective. The database would cost $60 million, or almost a tenth of the grant. New York City has a similar database, but it's gotten mixed reviews from teachers and principals. State Board of Regents Chancellor Merrill Tisch concedes there were kinks to work out in New York City, but she says the state wants to learn from the city's experience, not replicate it.
WNYC's Beth Fertig. The state will also spend the grant on updating the curriculum and teacher training. New York Archbishop Timothy Dolan says his meeting with Governor Patterson last night over the proposed Islamic Cultural Center and Mosque near Ground Zero focused on how religion can be brought to bear in the debate to encourage reconciliation and community rather than divisiveness. But Dolan says he has no concrete plans or steps and has no strong feelings about where the mosque should ultimately be. Earlier, the governor repeated his invitation to the project organizers to discuss moving it to a new site.
We're making an appeal. We're not telling anyone what to do with their rights. We don't do that in this country. We're making an appeal. And should they ever determine that they would like to have that conversation, I'd remain available. But I will respect them whatever they do.
At the same news conference, Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, whose district includes the World Trade Center site, said he feels the mosque and cultural center should be moved. Meanwhile, the organizers of the project, known as Park 51, are reaching out to other Muslims. This evening, they'll be holding a first-ever conference call with a cross-section of the community, including national religious leaders, activists, writers, and entertainers. The discussion is intended to answer questions about the project and address Islamophobia around the country. It will also touch on fundraising strategies for Park 51. Some Muslim activists say the Park 51 backers have been slow to build support within the Muslim community. Opening arguments were heard Tuesday in the trial of four men charged with trying to blow up a Bronx synagogue and shoot down military planes at Stewart Airport last year. Prosecutors say the men from Newburgh, New York, were caught on videotape plotting and praying together before setting out to launch the attack. WNYC's Elsa Chang was at the trial in Manhattan federal court. She says defense lawyers argued that James Cromartie and his co-defendants were baited and heavily pressured by a confidential FBI informant to go along with the plot.
The defense lawyers reminded the jurors that Newburgh, New York is a poor city, and each of these defendants were really short on money, in fact, quite desperate to make extra cash. The defense lawyers say that Cromartie was offered as much as $250,000 and a BMW just to go along with the plot. So the central premise of the defense's case is that these four defendants are actually hopelessly incompetent and unsophisticated people, that they had no money, no skills, no contacts, and absolutely no resources to have done any of this on their own.
WNYC's Elsa Chang. Prosecutors agreed the FBI informant facilitated the plot, but that the four men on trial took active steps to obtain and position the explosives. About 300 New Yorkers attended a downtown meeting to share with EPA officials their concerns over natural gas drilling. The EPA is preparing a $1.9 million study of the controversial gas drilling technique known as hydrofracking, which has been proposed in parts of upstate New York. Eileen McCrory lives in Manhattan but has a country house in the Catskills, and she's worried.
We don't want to be drinking gasoline water. We're spending too much time, too much money protecting the water supply to allow something like this to happen to it.
New York has not opened the door to fracking yet, but scores of wells have been drilled in Pennsylvania, and there have been problems, including contamination of creeks and drinking water supplies. Drilling companies insist, though, that fracking can be done safely with the proper safeguards in place. Taking a look at today's calendar, the Commerce Department releases reports on new home sales and durable goods orders for July. And there's a public meeting in Washington of the National Commission on the BP Deepwater Horizon spill and offshore drilling. Just a couple of things happening this Wednesday. Benazir Bhutto was the first female leader of an Islamic State. The former Pakistani prime minister was assassinated in 2007, weeks before an election that might well have returned her to power. She's the subject of a one-woman show at this year's Fringe Festival. WNYC's Arun Venugopal sat down with Anna Khaja, the Pakistani-American creator of Shahid, the dream and death of Benazir Bhutto. Khaja explains why Bhutto is just one of eight characters she decided to feature.
I selfishly intended to only play Benazir Bhutto. I think I kind of resemble her. The actress in me, who's always striving for more, thought, you know, it would be a good fit for me. But as I started my research, I started to realize that it's not just about who she was on the inside. It's about who she was to so many different people. She was revered. She was despised. And she was a complicated human being. And so I felt the best way to communicate who she was and what she meant to Pakistan and what she meant to the world was by showing all these different aspects of her.
In your portrayal of her, she is constantly weighed down by this burden, knowing that her death is imminent.
That's right. I mean, she was giving her daughters their birthday gifts for a year later. She knew what was most likely going to happen. Oh. She gave up being a mother. She gave up her life to, in some way, keep her father's movement of bringing democracy, real democracy, to Pakistan.
One of the biggest laughs in the audience, I thought, came during your portrayal of one of your characters, Condoleezza Rice.
Mm-hmm.
You suggest she was this preachy, smarmy woman who really talked down
democracy
to Benazir.
We both had fathers with the love and foresight to groom us for greatness.
I included Condoleezza Rice because I wanted to make it clear to the audience the pressure that Benazir was under in those last days of her life. The United States had clearly told her that she needed to follow through on her commitment. But Musharraf wasn't meeting his end of the commitment. He wasn't protecting her. He certainly wasn't welcoming her. And in a sense, the United States wasn't doing anything to support or protect her either.
You have this character, Afshan. She's this 13-year-old student at a madrasa. And on one hand, she's very sweet and wide-eyed and, you know, very naive. But she also goes around beating up prostitutes. I'm just wondering, what does Afshan tell us about the future of Pakistan?
The future of Pakistan is precarious. You know, I base that on a true story. In a girls' madrasa, they have something called Agitation Day. And a group of girls went out to the red light district and they found a brothel owner and they actually called in cameras and radio stations. They made that prostitute stand in front of them and read a statement saying that she was corrupting Pakistan. That's frightening to me. Now, madrasa just means school, but these fundamentalist madrasas are so scary, and I think a lot of the problem comes down to the fact that there's no public education. And these schools offer free clothing, free food, free shelter, free education, and it's very tempting.
The fact that you picked this 13-year-old, it sounds almost like comment on the country itself. It's almost like neither really a full-fledged adult in charge of itself, nor really, I mean, sort of.
That's right. It never has been. And there's a theme running throughout my play, I think, about fathers and daughters, and also about Benazir being a mother to Pakistan. I think that every character in my play, except perhaps Condoleezza, sort of by the end of their monologue disintegrates, or becomes very small and becomes this child looking for a mother figure in Benazir. You know, Pakistan is absolutely a broken country that's looking for leadership. And I think that's why the people adored her so much, because she represented that to them, that hope.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Anna Kaja talking with WNYC's Arun Venugopal about her one-woman show at this year's Fringe Festival. It's called Shahid, The Dream and Death of Benazir Bhutto. And we'll wrap it up with today's Gig Alert. Brought to you this Wednesday by New York-based Foro in the Dark. Tonight, this Brazilian collective brings its native brand of Forré music to New Blue in Alphabet City. You can download this instrumental track for free on our Culture page. Just click on Culture at WNYC.org. You can learn more about all the stories you heard here, download more podcasts, and go in depth with our reporters on the news blog. It's all at our website, WNYC.org. You can hear us there 24 hours a day, as well as on the air at 93.9 FM and AM 820. From the WNYC Newsroom, I'm Lance Lucky. Have a good Wednesday.